Welcome back to Living Lab Radio. I'm Heather Goldstone. Peter Hotez is a vaccine developer, an academic scientist and doctor who has dedicated his career to what he sees as the most promising way to eradicate devastating diseases that disproportionately affect the world's poorest. He's also been vocal about the safety and importance of vaccines and has written two books on the topic, Forgotten People, Forgotten Diseases, and Blue Marble Health. That alone would be enough to make Hotez the target of attacks by those who think vaccines can cause autism. But Peter Hotez is also the father of an adult daughter on the autism spectrum. And that combination has made him a target of particularly vitriolic attacks. His latest book is a head-on response to anti-vaccination campaigns entitled Vaccines Did Not Cause Rachel's Autism, My Journey as a Vaccine Scientist, Pediatrician, and Autism Dad. Peter, welcome to Living Lab Radio.
Oh, thanks so much for having me.
Can I just start by asking you to introduce us a little bit to Rachel, to your daughter?
Sure. So Rachel is 26 years old. She's my youngest daughter. I have two sons and two daughters. Rachel's the youngest daughter. She was born in the 1990s, and shortly after birth, my wife was the first to notice that something was a little different from Rachel compared to the other kids. And finally, she came to medical attention at 18, 19 months of age for developmental delays, and at 29 months got a diagnosis of what was then called pervasive developmental disorder, or PDD, which is now considered part of the autism spectrum.
Was it a difficult decision for you to write about Rachel and your family's experience, share that experience so publicly? I mean, you're quite forthright about the many challenges of raising and living with Rachel.
Yeah, it definitely took me out of my comfort zone. I had written other single-author books before, but primarily I'm a working scientist developing vaccines for neglected tropical diseases, and had written a couple of single author books about those diseases and the vaccines we're developing. But this is an interesting book. It's both a science book that goes into depth explaining why there's no link between vaccines and autism, and also goes into the science of what autism is and how it begins prenatally. But it also tells a very personal story about being an autism dad and a parent of Rachel, who not only has autism but also some profound intellectual disabilities that are both a struggle for her and a struggle for my wife and I, Anne and I's parents.
And the coincidence, I mean, sheer coincidence, that your life brings these two aspects of the ongoing debate about vaccines and autism just completely together, and also highlights the history of how things have evolved. I mean, when Rachel was diagnosed, as you said, wasn't even immediately diagnosed with autism, the process of diagnosing children with autism spectrum disorders has changed dramatically over Rachel's lifetime. And when she was diagnosed, this possible link to vaccines wasn't even a thing. What was the thinking at that time?
What happened was the idea that a vaccine could cause autism was not on the radar screen at all until 1998, when Rachel was 6 years old. And a paper was published, a scientific article was published in The Lancet, that alleged there was an association between the measles, mumps, rubella vaccine, the MMR vaccine — it was the measles component, the author said — was linked to inflammation in the colon, and then this somehow led to autism. The paper never made much sense to me at the time, because we already knew that the changes in the brains of kids with autism are pretty pervasive, and I couldn't imagine a mechanism by which a vaccine could cause autism. So even when the paper was published in 1998, I questioned its findings. And sure enough, it was uncovered by an investigative reporter for the Sunday Times of London, Brian Deer, who uncovered a pretty elaborate and extensive fraud that was perpetrated, and the paper was retracted. The problem was the paper wasn't retracted until 2010, some 12 years after it was first published. This enabled what became a very organized and well-funded anti-vaccine movement in Europe and the United States. And we're still living with the consequences of that. In fact, things have gotten even much worse over the last year or two. So the major reason I wrote the book was I saw the anti-vaccine movement going unopposed. We're now in a situation where across Europe we've had 40,000 measles cases the first half of 2018 and 40 deaths associated with that. We've now, in the situation in the United States, we have about half a dozen states in the western part of the country where kids aren't getting vaccinated, and we had 200 influenza deaths this year among kids, and almost all of those kids were not vaccinated despite recommendation. We have teenage girls not getting their cervical cancer vaccine, all because of this phony anti-vaccine movement, and I felt nobody was really speaking out about it, and I was uniquely positioned because, as you point out, I'm a vaccine scientist and an autism dad, so if I don't do it, who will?
I'm talking with Peter Hotez. He is a vaccine developer, scientist, and doctor at Baylor College of Medicine, and author most recently of Vaccines Did Not Cause Rachel's Autism, My Journey as a Vaccine Scientist, Pediatrician, and Autism Dad. When we talk about Andrew Wakefield's now debunked work, you know, as you said, the work has been, the scientific work has been retracted. He actually has had his medical license revoked. But I wonder if we go back to the very beginnings of this, do we know what sparked that idea? What drove Andrew Wakefield to fabricate this link between vaccines and autism?
Yeah, it's hard to know what the motivation was. I mean, there's some descriptions of conflicts of interest and this kind of thing, but it almost doesn't really matter because what happened was, even after that paper was retracted, other individuals came forward and alleged different things about vaccines causing autism. So whereas the original paper was on MMR vaccine, the measles, mumps, rubella vaccine, then Bobby Kennedy, RFK Jr., came out and talked about thimerosal preservative that used to be in vaccines.
Which is a mercury-based preservative, right?
Right, causing autism. And then that got debunked, and we have massive evidence showing there's no link between thimerosal and vaccines and autism, and I cite some of that in the book. And then it's like playing what I call a game of global health whack-a-mole, where you knock one down, another one pops up. And but, you know, I try to cut through all of that by showing everything we've learned about autism over the last 20 years and the evidence showing how the changes in the brains of kids with autism are beginning prenatally during pregnancy, well before they ever see vaccines. So I like to highlight how there's not even any plausibility that vaccines cause autism.
It's interesting, not only your life brings these two things together, but you are in Texas at Baylor College of Medicine, and Texas has really become, just in the past couple of years, as you said, ground zero for the anti-vaccination campaigns and how that plays out in society. Andrew Wakefield actually moved to Austin, and we've seen vaccination rates in Texas drop. We've seen measles outbreaks. And one of the things that's really interesting about that is that prior to this, anti-vaccination views had mostly been associated, and you talk about this a little bit in the book, with more liberal, educated communities. How is this playing out in the more conservative areas of Texas?
So what we've seen now is pretty upsetting. We've now, according to the Texas Health Department, we're up to 57,000 kids not getting vaccinated in Texas, and those are the ones we know about, because we have over 300,000 homeschooled kids in the state of Texas, and we have no idea the percentage of those kids not getting their vaccine. So we're likely looking at well over 100,000 kids not getting vaccinated. Texas, and it's focused more in the Austin area and some of the North Texas towns like Plano and Denton. And then we have the situation where only less than 40% of teenage girls are getting their cervical cancer vaccine. So we're basically condemning a whole generation of girls and women to cervical cancer. And then we have all of this anti-vaccine rhetoric around the flu vaccine. So people aren't taking their flu vaccine. And we've had, in the U.S., we had over 200 children die in last year's, the 2018 flu epidemic, the vast majority of which were never vaccinated despite recommendations. So there's some terrible things going on in our state. And, you know, here I was working in the Texas Medical Center, Baylor College of Medicine, Texas Children's Hospital, developing vaccines. And right under our noses was all of this anti-vaccine activity. So that was an important stimulus to kind of stand out there and refute it.
One of the things you point out, just a very logical argument in the book, is that, you know, if mercury vaccines were responsible for autism, then with that having been taken out, we should have seen a drop in autism diagnoses. And instead, what we've seen in recent years is autism diagnoses increasing. And there's a valid debate about how much of that is because the way that we diagnose autism has changed and how much of that is actually an increase in the prevalence of autism spectrum disorders.
And that, by the way, that number is going to go up again because, you know, we used to say it was 10 to 1 boys to girls with autism, and we've gotten a lot better at diagnosing girls and women on the autism spectrum, and they have very high rates of comorbidities like obsessive compulsive disorder, eating disorders, ADHD, attention deficit hyperactivity disorders, and it's the comorbidities that get diagnosed. So I would expect that as we get better at diagnosing girls and women with autism, the numbers are going to rise again. So it's, I think the term that the anti-vaccine groups use are words like epidemic, which I think is very damaging to people on the autism spectrum. And there is no epidemic.
What do we know, though, about what does cause autism? What are we learning on that front?
So we've learned that, and there's been some really elegant scientific work showing how the changes in the brain begins prenatally. We've identified at least 65 genes that have been linked with autism. In fact, we, with Rachel, we did whole exome sequencing on her DNA, and we think we've identified a new gene that could be added to that list of 65. We don't know what the upper limit of those numbers of genes are, but we're learning so much about it. And then there's what's called an epigenetic piece probably as well. And while there could be changes in the environment that are associated with autism, but it's happening around the time of conception or early pregnancy, not something that's happening after the child's born.
You and others have made the point that while we spend time and money and effort debating and re-debunking the purported link between vaccines and autism, that is taking resources and time and effort and focus away from other avenues of research and other resources for families living with autistic children and in your case, adult, you know, an adult daughter with autism. Where would you like to see those resources put instead?
Well, that's a great question. You know, one of the things we're struggling with now is Rachel is an adult and employment opportunities for her are extremely limited. Finally, Goodwill came to our rescue. Now she works 2 hours a day at Goodwill, makes a minimum wage, but, you know, she's thrilled to very proud to take home a paycheck. So that's been really great. But for so many individuals on the autism spectrum, they have very limited employment options or home care or residential placement. And part of that, I think I assert in the book, is because of the anti-vaccine lobby. They suck all the oxygen out of the air with these phony autism debates so that every time that someone mentions the word autism, what pops up first is vaccines. And what we need to do is really give attention to what children and adults on the autism spectrum really need to be successful.
Peter Hotez is dean for the National School of Tropical Medicine at Baylor College of Medicine and author most recently of Vaccines Did Not Cause Rachel's Autism, My Journey as a Vaccine Scientist, Pediatrician, and Autism Dad. Peter, thanks so much.
Thanks so much for giving attention to this issue.
And that's our show. Until next week, I'm Heather Goldstone. Thanks for listening.
Living Lab Radio is produced by WCAI in Woods Hole and WGBH Radio in Boston. It's produced by me, Elsa Partan, and Heather Goldstone is executive producer. Funding for Living Lab Radio comes from the Candida Fund, investing in transformative leaders and ideas. Theme music by Stellwagen Symphonette.